I'm radio voicing in the countdown.
That's how ready you are.
Yeah. The end? The end.
I got nothing.
No, I know. It's early for you.
No, I got less than nothing.
Take a picture of your clock just so the listeners know what time it is. Or just tell us. Just tell us.
Okay. 6:15.
A.M.
In the A.M.
All right. Hello and welcome to episode 290 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me as always is...
Adam, Vancouver, BC, Canada. And Blam.
The BC stands for before Canada AM. I don't know, early. Something early.
Okay.
I started down that road not knowing where it was going to go.
Okay.
And now I wish I hadn't.
I have something to complain about this morning.
Lovely. Let's start with something negative.
Okay. It's not photography related, although I'm sure you can create a mental picture in your mind.
Okay.
Costco. Do they have Costco in Germany?
It's called Das Costco, yeah.
Yeah. But they have it. They have the same thing.
No, not at all. Nor near it.
Okay.
Yeah. And they don't even sell like how sometimes you go to the Safeway or whatever. We would hit the version of that here would be called the Etika. They don't even have, you can't even buy stuff in large bulk. Like at Safeway, you can occasionally get things in a larger,
right?
You know what amount. Can't even do that here.
Oh, okay.
You have to buy eggs one at a time.
But you know Costco.
I know it very well.
And you know Richmond, British Columbia, Canada, Costco.
Worst one in the league.
I challenge somebody to find a worse Costco.
Can't do it.
In terms of everything from the parking to the frenzy in the aisles to the, you can't maneuver anywhere, anytime because someone's parked their buggy at a 45-degree angle and standing and talking with a group of 11 of their friends. It's the worst. Everything about it is the worst, except for it's wildly useful to go there to buy big quantities of stuff that you know your family consumes a lot of, right?
Coffee. So, I buy my coffee there.
Yeah, buy my coffee there. Eggs there, too. Eggs and a bunch of other stuff. But, oh my God, I thought yesterday, Thursday afternoon, so when we're recording this Friday, but Thursday afternoon, I went at about... 4 o'clock, thinking this was a great time. This is a weekday. This is 4 o'clock in the summer. Like, who's going to be at Costco now? Everybody else had the same idea. And I proceeded to hate life for about, 58 minutes.
I don't think they had the same idea. The clientele that you're speaking of, the clueless individuals, they don't have any forethought at all, is my opinion. Okay. Like, they're not thinking, hey, man, I'll go then. For them... I get the impression that the clustered mess is their goal. Like they enjoy it.
Yeah. And what I mean, I have a big time gripe about the samples. The samples used to be a thing that in certain times they sort of do samples, but you've got the widest buggies in the universe because people need to apparently, buy 15 metric tons of stuff when they're at Costco every time. Mm-hmm. So they have the widest buggies in the world. And then, a zillion people, like there's no allowance to how many people I don't think, can be in a Costco without it being a fire hazard. Cause I've never seen.
You're saying they need a bouncer.
They need something. They need narrower buggies, or they need, an allotment of how many people can be in the facility at one time. Mm-hmm. But there's a problem because on top of that, they stack up these, tasting stations. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if they have a tiny piece of moldy toast that they're handing out. There's going to be 1,500 people lined up.
It's a street fight.
Oh, my goodness. I want to kill those sample stations. Out of principle, I will never have a sample at Costco because I hate what it does. And I guarantee you, it doesn't sell more moldy toast. Like, I don't believe that for a second.
All of the samples that they have, it's not things that, I mean, first of all, it's, oh, hey, that's salt and fat. Mmm. Or, if it's not, oh, hey, that's sugar and fat.
Right.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And P.S., have you ever tried bacon? It's delicious. Just go buy some.
Yeah.
You can buy 3 metric tons
yeah.
for $8. Why not just go ahead and take that gamble?
Yeah, I really don't get it. I think once you've gone to Costco, you're committed. You're going to buy stuff. You're going to see stuff that you didn't even think you were going to buy, and you're going to buy it, and that's how Costco works. You don't need to have tasting stations. That part of it just creates an even worse environment. I hate it. And the buggy thing, too. I'm like, I think the buggies could be a little bit narrower, and then people could actually maneuver them in a Costco. So mm-hmm. Costco executives that are listening to this right now, please, for the love of whatever, please make your buggies a little narrower.
I think they are not going to because it seems to be a successful model for them, except for you. I mean, and myself,
It could be more successful.
I don't know if turnover is their thing. I mean, everything's bulk, right? Obviously, volume is, and speaking of that, the volume level in there is always high. Everyone's yelling, and I feel your pain. Now, I'm going to go ahead and make a wild suggestion here that Costco has always been somewhat like this. However, it's in the last 8 years where it's become just unusable.
Yes, it's I have to really want to go to kind of get myself through.
I have a reason though.
Okay.
I think cell phones are really causing problems there. If they were to create a net inside that building where you could not use your cell phone for anything, I'll bet you people would pay attention to what they're doing a little bit more.
Yeah, you're right. But that goes for life in general, I think, everywhere.
True.
But yeah, it gets compounded in a Costco with the volume plus the buggy situation plus the little food tasting spots. All of that's just a disaster. Remove one of those variables and you would probably have a much better experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the parking is off, and this is more specific to Richmond. I don't know about all Costcos. I've been to many Costcos and never dealt with a parking situation that's anything close to Richmond. When they designed that parking lot, they didn't know they were going to deal with the volume they're dealing with. Like, it's a huge lot, and yet it's always, always overrun with, you know, 5 or 6 cars patrolling each laneway just looking for a spot. Like, I hate it. I mm-hmm. hate it with a passion, the parking situation.
No, I used to work, okay, 40 more minutes on this and then we're done. But
okay, all right.
I used to, in a previous life, I used to work for the city of Richmond.
Yeah.
And my job was to kind of go around, and it doesn't matter what my job was. Never did it. Just slept all day. but shovel leaning. I was a shovel leaner.
Okay.
But that was kind of my area. It was in and around Costco. And so I remember when they built the Costco and there was nothing around for miles. Like, there was there was a few things, but very, very little. So they built it in an area where they thought, all right, this is going to be fine. And then everything built up around it, like crazy amounts. Like, just getting to that Costco is a problem. Not even the parking lot. Just getting there from you know, whatever direction you come is actually difficult.
Yeah, once you get within sort of 3 city blocks, you basically know where everybody's going.
Yes. Now for our listeners who have tuned out, go ahead and Google Maps it. It is in North Richmond. You can Google Map it and see what we're talking about, and still not actually care.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But I feel your pain, man. I think the last trip out, generally when we fly back to Canada for a month or a couple of 3 months or whatever, like day 1, day 2, we make the trip to Costco because, you know, we know we're going to eat X amount of whatever it is. So we get our basics there. The last 2 trips, I don't think we went. Because my wife said, I can't do this anymore. My wife, who is, I wouldn't say she's the cheapest person in the world, but she definitely likes, she enjoys value.
Okay.
There's a nice way of putting this, but yeah. Like, she's really conscious of
frugal.
Budget. Yeah, frugal. Like frugal in a good way. She doesn't mind spending money, doesn't like to waste money. That's her deal.
Okay.
And so even she said, I can't justify this anymore. Like my life and sanity and time is worth far more than the $4 I'm gonna save on coffee. Let's not go there.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. Okay, Costco.
All right.
Balls in your court.
I have plugged them for their photos, so there's that. So we're even. Costco.
There's gotta be an online component there, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do that, Costco. All right. Well, we can skip the what's going on. You know where you should buy your stuff, Adam?
Oh, Amazon.
Amazon.
Yeah, I've got a purchase coming up. I made it yet, but I have to make a new purchase in the next few days. So
what'd you get?
I haven't got it yet, but I have to pull the trigger on some new grills for my barbecue. So
okay.
Yeah. So there's and it's
like the have, like the new oh it's a side by side like two.
Yeah, they're okay. Like and there's more than one component I kind of needed. My barbecue is now 5 or 6 years old. It's a Weber grill, and the grill part itself is probably okay. But they have these kind of like ceramic bars that go underneath that heat up underneath the grill. It's kind of a Weber thing. They're called like flavorizer bars, and so after six years of wear,
they don't flavorize anything.
No, but they heat up and it creates a more even heat across the grill, I think is how it works. I don't know.
Sure.
But anyways, they're started to like literally burn through, so there's some holes in them, and then you can get flare-ups, which I don't like. The Weber barbecue that I have is the greatest barbecue ever, and when it dies, I will immediately buy another one. It is fantastic. They do sell the entire barbecue on Amazon as well. So
okay, now this is you have like the large at home one. I have a medium sort of semi portable one if you're strong enough.
Yeah.
Weber as well. I have one of those sort of beige roundy kind of ones that you've seen.
Yeah.
And I love it as well. I cannot say enough about it. It was actually considerably more expensive here in Germany when I bought it, like quite a lot more, but there's no options here in Germany. Like, so I wasn't going to buy it in Canada and then take it in my carry-on.
Right.
That would be a problem. So I bit the bullet. Also bought a Weber on Amazon a few years ago. Love mine.
Yeah. So and it's easy. I was going to say it's easy to replace parts too on Amazon. They have all the little parts.
So you have to replace is the bottom ceramic thing.
Yeah, the bars, the little flavorized. Okay. They come like a pack of six. I just need to buy a new package of those. But they're not cheap. I think a package of six I think is about $50 Canadian. So they're not cheap, but at the same time a new barbecue is $1,000, so I'm pretty sure I'm gonna go this route.
And you like flavor.
And I do like to flavorize things, yeah. So yes.
They have them at Costco for $49. I'd get them there.
And I was gonna say, update on the cast iron pan. Wow, do I love this thing.
Yeah. Use mine today.
And I've been sort of like I wasn't super thrilled the first couple times. Like you said, you kind of have to build a little bit of a base. And so I went online because a lot of the online cooking kitchen sites, I read about 4 or 5 just to sort of say, you know, what's the best way to really get your pan going. And, you know, it seems to be there's a process of like, you know, laying down more oil and then just baking into the oven to kind of create sort of a better kind of non-stick crust. And so I did that a few times. I think I did 3 times with just a very light coat of vegetable oil and then baking it in the oven. And now that thing is just like purring like a kitten. So
and it's just going to get better and better.
Yeah. So I would advise everybody. And you were talking about, you know, how it's more expensive in Germany and in Canada, which it is clearly. Mm-hmm. I think the U.S. price on the Lodge 10 1/4 inch pan, like the standard size pan that most people would use, was $10.50 American or something like that on Amazon. I think it was just under $11, and in Canada it was $30, which I am still fine with. That is still very reasonable for a pan. So if anybody, I've talked to tons of physiotherapy patients in the last week about, you know, whether they use it. It seems like the people who are into cooking are using cast iron, or They're all suffering elbow problems. So. Or well, wrist problems. Like I have a few older patients who were, I used to use cast iron and now I find that it's a little bit heavy for me. So now I've moved on to one of the alloys. But yeah, if you can handle, I don't know, what do they weigh? 15 pounds, something like that?
They're heavy. I know because I mean, for years I had one in Canada and I always kind of meant to bring it over with me. You know, one of my many, many trips back to Vancouver, and I was going to bring it back. I knew I needed it here, but I never had the weight in my luggage. I never had room for it. And then finally, about a year ago, I came back, and I just found myself with a whole bunch of weight space, so I fired it. Finally, I finally brought it, because I'd been dragging my heels on it, because as expensive as they are in Canada, they're even way more, in Germany. Mm-hmm. Like, they cost more, and in euros. And so, it's crazy. But
you will hand it off to your grandchildren, so...
Oh, you know, I'm going to be buried with mine. Forget it.
But I just think to everybody out there, even if you don't remember to click through the Two Hoser site, which you should, but if you don't, still buy one of these, because it is awesome, and you will absolutely, if you don't have one, you will love it, and you will not ever have to buy another one of these pans that after 3 months or 6 months, the coating is gone and you have to toss away. I've made that mistake too many times. Mm-hmm. Until I can't lift this pan, this will be my pan.
Oh, I'll hire somebody to lift it for me. That's what I'm going to end up doing. I have two of them. I have a big one like you have, and then I have a very small one just for a single egg. It's perfect. I love it. And you're going to cook your onions and whatnot on your barbecue when you replace your flavorizers.
Flavorizers, yeah.
Yeah, you will do the onions and whatnot out there, the lid closed, and can't believe how awesome it is. So, but the two mistakes, real quick before we move on, two mistakes are people who hate them, not for the weight, but people who hate them for the because everything sticks to it. The deal is these people don't scrub it. Don't scrub it with soap and scour it out. You want it to be black. Leave it black. Just kind of wipe it out. You're going to be fine.
Yeah, just hot water is kind of the move, I guess.
The second move that I hear from people all the time is, we have one, but we only use it for camping.
Ooh.
Don't understand that. Use it all the time. Bring it camping, but use it at home as well. The more you use it, if you use it regularly, it'll be even better and better. It won't stick. If you only use it once a year for camping, you're not getting the most out of it.
Okay.
We should talk about pictures.
Yeah, photography. I'm going to take a picture of my pan.
Do it. Try. You know what? I'm daring you to try to make it interesting. That's a tough photo to make interesting.
Well, I can add food into it, right?
That will definitely, yeah, that'll help.
Okay. I'm doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Early on, until you've used it for regularly for at least 6 months, I would recommend not making scrambled eggs in it.
Yeah.
Go ahead and make fried eggs. Don't scramble them because it does a weird thing until you get out 6 months in. And also tomatoes have the acid just kind of kicks the hell out of it.
Okay. So good tips.
Once you're in deep, you're fine. Like, I make spaghetti sauce in there, like, you know, with fresh tomatoes, stuff like that. It's endless. Love it. All right. Wanted to mention a while. I don't know if it's still the case now because we're kind of recording a little bit ahead because of the summer. But while we're recording this, both the banner photo and the profile photo of our hero Adam Carolla, both those photos were done by the Two Hosers on different continents.
That's big.
I don't know if it's big. I find it pretty cool.
You now know both of the producers, right? So
two of them, yeah.
Yeah, and I imagine they handle the bulk of the social media stuff for Adam Carolla's Facebook page.
I don't think either one of them do.
Oh, okay, because I was thinking, is that a coincidence? Like, how does that work? Who totally, handles
it? It's a coincidence. There's no way. I don't think there's any way that they made the connection.
I thought for sure they must have, because I thought maybe Gary, producer Gary, because he was at the Vancouver show. Mm-hmm. I sent the pictures of the ones that I took to producer Gary. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, okay, you did an interview with them. I mean, but again, he wasn't there in England when you went to England.
No.
And then I kind of was, what I was thinking about it, and I was like, I wonder if it is coincidence. And then I tried to look back to see when, because I have no clue when he put up the banner photo. Like, it was a wide shot that I took in Vancouver as his, what do you call that? What do you call the wide one on Facebook? Is there a name for that?
That's the banner, I think.
That's the banner. Whatever. So that photo, I was trying to figure out if it went up the same time that he put up the cover photo.
No,
the
I think yours was up earlier.
It turns out it was, and so I was like, oh well, maybe it's not related. Maybe that's just a weird, crazy coincidence.
It is, because I sent Gary an email and saying, hey man, did you know that? Like, just, you know, little tidbit. Both of these were shot by, you know, co-host of the show on different continents at different times, and he did not know. He said, oh, hey, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Mm-hmm. And I think the one that he put up that I had taken was put up, like, I want to say maybe a couple months, or I don't know how long ago that show was that I did, but it was a couple months ago, wasn't it?
You had to have been in April, I think.
Yeah, whenever it was, so a few months ago, that photo went out way after the fact.
Right. So,
after the Gary interview. Anyway, so yeah, seems like a coincidence.
So we're both flattered, and it's not so much, the flattering part is nice. That's great. But the part that's really cool to me is that it wasn't planned, and it was on two different continents. And like, that's the way where technology is now. That part is amazing to me.
It also makes me happy that I did that gig, because I did that gig for nothing more than I just wanted the experience. And I was pretty sure walking away from it that the photos were going to more or less just kind of go nowhere, other than the fan photos that I knew they were going to post on Facebook. So I'm happy to see the ones I took that were more specifically for them. Or actually got some use. Like, I know he posted one of a happy birthday to his news girl, and that was a photo that I had taken, and then the cover photo. So, it makes me happy to think, okay, well, they got some use out of it. Obviously, they like the stuff.
And next time they're in Vancouver, they'll invite you to come out and shoot for free again.
Yeah, yeah. No, I already got the invite, so.
Like that. Well, yeah. No, it's actually, yeah, no, nah.
But you know what? In all honesty, and I would do it again. So there you go.
It's one of those things. Like, we'll talk about doing free work on another show, and when to do it, when not to do it. But let's skip over the shoot anything interesting, because you know your Costco story used all of that time.
Oh yeah, that was interesting.
It was good. That was interesting.
I think everyone can relate to Costco.
I think everybody can. I mean, or Superstore. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Without a membership. Okay, challenge photo. Right in the challenge photo.
Okay.
Eye level.
Yes.
That was the eye level one.
Yeah.
I took a couple. I took a couple intentional. Who do you want to start with, yours or mine?
We did yours last time. Let's do mine.
Which one are you going with here? I have a clear favorite which one I like of yours.
I'll go with the alternate.
Yeah, that was mine. That was my choice.
The one of Jack, just because it's more about, you would usually, if you weren't thinking about this as an eye level, you'd probably do this one wrong, or I would have done this one wrong a few years ago.
Probably, but okay, I like this. It's not, now this is a like one of those zip line things where he's moving, right?
Yeah, he's moving. It's not a zip line, but it's a hanging kind of thing that they swing on. They swing on these things from a tree. So,
okay, but they swing side to side is my point.
It can swing in any direction, just hanging from a branch, a big kind of rope with a handle on it.
Okay, but so it could go in a circle.
Sure, can go
or
anywhere.
Or back and forth. The point is, it's not an up and down thing.
No.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting at. So conventionally, in my mind, I'm thinking, since the motion is going, you know, left to right, whatever, or forward and back, I'm going to shoot this in a landscape mode, not in portrait mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be wrong. This is much better. It's not what I would have thought. I like this better. Of what's going on with like the line coming down, you know, with his feet and all that. And I think the reason that you shot it here is the spotlight effect on his face.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it.
Great. You got that dappled light I happen to love, which really, really makes this photo. Now, the eye level part, how would you have shot this before?
Well, I probably would have just been standing up, and as a result, like, his head is maybe, I don't know, 3 feet off the ground. So if I'm standing, my head is probably at an angle where his feet are at that level. Mm-hmm. And then I would basically be shooting and I would get much more ground and him looking up at me as opposed to kind of his perspective on this.
Right.
And so you lose the background. Of course, I really wanted the tree. Like I wanted the angle. I wanted to see as much of that rope as possible. Not as possible, because then I would have had to been shooting straight up. But I wanted to shoot enough of it that you sort of get the branches from the tree. You kind of know, okay, here's something hanging from a tree. And then here's his perspective. Here's his relative position to the ground. Because if I shoot that on an angle, you also lose perspective in terms of the distance between the body and the ground. Mm-hmm. And then you lose that other parts of the background that weren't important. But again, I like the perspective of the background better.
Mm-hmm. So had this not been the challenge, would you have still shot it at this angle?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I shot this photo before the challenge because, we didn't have enough time to record between.
Right. So there you go. Absolutely. There you go.
But I looked around at all my photos. It was funny because I went back and I was looking through my photos because we said, okay, well, I'm going to find an eye level photo just from the batch I just took. And they're all eye level.
It's nice to get into that habit. I'll say never. I'm assuming it's never. I can't imagine when I ever shoot my kids sort of from my perspective.
Right.
So it's always, I always get down there and engage them. And, you know, I guess I was inspired by the movie E.T. The whole movie was shot, from what I remember or what I was told, the whole movie was shot from the perspective of a child. Because it's a child's movie and how they see people. So I haven't gone back and looked at it in a long time. But I think even the adults are kind of shot from down low looking up. But basically the idea being that all the kids are right on eye level.
That's interesting. I've watched that movie, I don't know, maybe a year ago with my kids. It must just work seamlessly because they don't think about it in that way.
No. Spielberg tended to do that, work things in seamlessly like that.
Yeah.
All right, let's have a look at my photo. It's my kids on the bikes.
Okay, I'm looking at it. Yeah, I like it. I like that.
Even though my son's not cooperating.
That's okay. Yeah, you're gonna get that. Yeah, I like it. I like the clouds. I like the look of this is kids. Now you're actually, it seems like you're even lower, right?
Yeah, it's hard to say because I'm on like there's a little road, like a bike path that I'm like paved that I'm on. And yeah. They're kind of in the grass a little bit. So it could be a little bit different levels. It's hard to say exactly where I am.
Yeah, it's the effect though. Yeah.
I'm probably at my son's level and then kind of looking up because I want to include part like as much of the sky.
Yeah, yeah.
As I could. But yeah, this shot, if I took it from adult level, would not work at all. You would see so much of like the wheat field behind them instead, and it wouldn't have the impact that it does.
And sometimes you're adjusting the level also because where you want their bodies to fit into the background. So mm-hmm. I mean, I like this this picture. If you shot it at a different angle, like if you're standing up, even just you're standing, you know, 10 inches higher, well then their relative to position to the sky is going to be different. So I like mm-hmm. how they're positioned with other, you know, their head and shoulders up into the clouds, which just works much better than if they're down and only their head was above the mountain or the hill or whatever you want to call that behind them.
I think I had a version like that and just really didn't like it. And
yeah,
because this shot, this was not at all intended to be for the challenge. I had shot a couple of other photos specifically for the challenge at eye level. And then this was basically, I liked the sky, and so I thought, oh, well, great, I'm just going to shoot that. And then all of a sudden, I'll notice, hey, I'm shooting it at eye level, so that this is a much better photo. I'll use it for the challenge. For this shot, I used a polarizer, which we'll talk a little bit about in the topic this week, which is also why I had them in the grass. We were riding along the bike path, but it was basically running on the same, on the same line as the sun. So if I wanted to get that really, the clouds to really pop with the polarizer, I was going to be shooting with my back to the sun. The skies wouldn't have the same effect.
Right.
So I kind of placed them in the long grass and said, okay, we'll shoot at a 90, and then that way we'll get the nice pop in the clouds.
Okay.
So, there you go. And I just to include a sample, another sample version. This wasn't my photo challenge, but there's a shot of my daughter eating ice cream at the edge of the river.
Mm-hmm.
We'd ridden. This was on the same. This was a bike ride to go eat ice cream. So that's what was all the same thing. She's wearing the exact same jacket. She likes pink, in case you were wondering.
Got it.
And so here, yeah. So I shot one at eye level, and then shot the exact same shot from adult level, just to illustrate the example, just to drive it home.
Yeah, and this is exactly what 90% of my photos looked like, you know, 5 years ago.
And that's what the bulk of people now, I see them shooting, and they end up getting this. And it's not, you don't want the flotsam and the jetsam, you know, in the river. You would rather have, you know, her and a nice reflection and the buildings in behind and the bit of the bridge and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an example of really get down low.
Yeah, don't do this.
Don't do that. Don't do the second one.
Yeah.
Okay. This week's topic was kind of out of the blue. It just what I kind of recognized in my photo. We're going to talk about the skies, sky and skies. And I guess it's really only one sky, but there's different kinds.
Okay.
Thus the pluralization I've done.
Okay.
Lately I've been really committed to including the sky. Not even lately, like the last couple of years, really, but. Like, if you look at the cover shot on the Two Hoser site, the banner on the twohosers.com, I believe it has a shot including the sky with my son on a tricycle, I think.
Okay.
So it's been a while. That's been up for at least a year. Or I took it a year ago anyways. But my point being, I've really been committed to including the skies because oftentimes we try to avoid the sky because...
It blows out?
It blows out. It really causes a latitude problem, especially when you're shooting people. Like, if you're shooting landscapes, you can generally get away with it and be fine. But when you're shooting people, oftentimes it just blows out or you have dark people.
Right.
That's how it goes. But for, like, I wouldn't say my style, but I've been committed to... including as much context without being distracting, but as much context as possible in my photos. And for me, a lot of that is the sky. I want to include that if I can. Now, you can't always. So, in order to include the sky, you need to expose for the sky. Like you said, it blows out. But if we expose for the sky, what happens to our people?
Their faces are too dark.
Boom, they're gone. Too dark. Can't do anything with that. So what you can do is you can light them with a flash if you like, or bring a bounce board and bounce some light in if you want.
Mm-hmm.
That's not always ideal. There's a third move you can do. Do you know it?
You can expose somewhere in the middle and bring up the shadows on
the
face.
Okay. Sure, that's the fourth one. That's our solution.
Okay. What's the third one?
Graduated ND filter.
Okay.
Now, you can put a graduated filter, which is basically, it starts out, you know, at an ND9 or whatever. You can decide and gradually fades into an ND0 somewhere, you know, in the middle of the filter. And that way you can position it so that the top part of your image is darkened and then you control where it gets light. So in this case, the clouds would be exposed. They'd be, you know, three stops underexposed, and then my kids would be properly exposed.
Okay.
Wildly specific filter. It's okay if you have time and are shooting landscapes, but for kids, good luck.
Okay.
Good luck to you. So what we want to do is we want to avoid the ND, the graduated ND filter. We want to avoid using a flash, and we want to avoid using a bounce. So, I think you nailed it. You nailed point number four of our five-point process here.
Okay.
So, point number one, if you want to get a decent exposure on your subject and the sky, what do you look for?
A decent exposure on your subject and the sky. Open shade?
We can possibly.
No, that won't work because then you're gonna darken their face even more.
There are times, but no. Generally, what I would suggest is shoot at a good time of the day. Yes, first. Like first, that's
number one. Yeah,
that is the blanket advice we give on everything, you know. But it's that important. So I would shoot at a good time of day, which is, you know, early morning, late in the evening, in good weather. You can't make, you know, a silk purse out of a sow's ear. You can't do it. So you have to wait until there are interesting skies. You know, whether that's clouds or sunsets with clouds or whatever it is, you have to put yourself in a good position. Now, with my kids, I had cool skies. Like, the clouds looked really cool. I didn't do anything to those. That's pretty much, I wouldn't say, it's not in camera. I had to do a little dancing, but it wasn't a lot. It wasn't like I manufactured that. That was what they looked like. So if you recognize that being a good situation, then go ahead and shoot.
Yeah. You can do it if you have enough light on your subject. So, I mean, obviously, the more light you have on your subject, the more you can darken the sky, right?
Correct. So, now, that means shooting at, you know, later in the evening, like I did here.
Right.
Now, unfortunately,
direct sunlight just gives you the big raccoon eyes.
It would. Now, this would have been nice. Like, there was clouds, you know, the sun was camera right. It's kind of a soft light because the cloud ducked behind, or the sun ducked behind a cloud just as I was shooting this, and it took away my kind of, because there was nice golden spotlight on my kids and then dark in the background. But then now you can see that shifted, and there was that kind of golden sunlight on the trees and behind my son. Well, that a minute ago was on my son and the trees were dark.
Right.
And then, of course, my kids wouldn't cooperate at the time, and this is the best I could do. So ideally, I would have shot in that situation, but being late in the evening allowed for that possibility. Just to go back, there was a shot I did, again, not to mention Corolla twice in one episode, but here we are. I did that shot of him that I posted a couple weeks ago of him holding his helmet with the sky in the background.
Yeah.
Now, that was lit. That one was 100% lit with off-camera flash, so it wasn't what we're talking about here. However, the skies themselves were not interesting. They were terrible, just a flat gray. Like, I couldn't even use them. I could not make an image out of it. But I had an approximately 2-minute window in which to shoot that shot, so I couldn't wait for interesting skies. Corolla was going to go race and then, you know, go back to Los Angeles, and that was that. So I had to make the best of it. So what I ended up doing was shot that shot and then wait until interesting skies happened out behind my house, shot that sky, and placed it in.
Right.
Didn't want to. Really, really, really wanted it out of camera. But didn't have the opportunity. So if it's a shot where I'm shooting a controllable entity, like myself or a friend or something like that, who I can shoot anytime, I would wait until the skies look really good. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Step two is much, much easier than using a graduated ND filter, is just use a circular polarizer. I very much love this filter.
Okay.
And that will give a lot of pop to the sky. It'll add, you know, some sort of drama to the clouds. It'll make the blues pop out. It's really good. But
What do you think about skin tones, though? Like, because we're talking about shooting people.
It can alter them. I think if you have a cheap circular polarizer, it can mess up the skin tones a little bit, which mine is actually kind of cheap, really cheap. So you kind of have to correct for that later. I can't always do, being the colorblind guy.
Yeah, I have a pretty nice one. I have a Hoya one that still is tricky on skin tones.
Yeah.
I think it gives everybody kind of like just a tanned sort of look. If you have the effect that really deepens the blue skies, it seems to obviously affect the skin tones as well in a more dramatic way. So
yes,
the challenge seems to be, okay, well, how much do I want to work on the skin tones and how dark do I want the sky? And then, yeah, you have to also adjust your angle according to that in terms of where you place yourself relative to the sun.
True. True. I mean, and there are ways to deal with it in post where you can darken the sky, you can fake polarize it. But if you don't have a polarizer, I'd definitely keep your eye open for one. I wouldn't spend a lot of money on it if you're just kind of like, well, like Adam and I sort of figuring out you can use it here and there.
Craigslist. It's a good, they're very widely available. At least they were when I was looking in Vancouver for a circular polarizer. And I went with kind of the one I thought I'd use the most, which was a 58 millimeter, which fits the 85 and the 50 millimeter lens that I have. So in the filter size, I don't have one for the 70 to 200. You've talked about step up rings and whatnot before. The bigger the polarizer, the more expensive it gets as well. So just keep that in mind.
I happened to find mine at a camera store in the $5 bin, and it was a 72 mil and in great shape. So for five euros, I took a gamble and have the step down rings. So. Okay, but the polarizer will only get you so far. You can't darken it that much. So step three, and this is really important, in order to make this happen, you got to shoot raw. Very important.
Okay, why?
Because you're going to use every millimeter of latitude that you can possibly squeeze out of your camera for later. If you go ahead and bake it all in JPEG, you're going to lose the highlights, you're going to lose the shadows. Which, you know, oftentimes it doesn't matter. In this case, it matters. You're going to shoot raw. Okay. So that number four, we can do what Adam said earlier. Expose in the...
middle.
In the middle. That means, you know, if you have a situation where you have the sky is pretty bright, your subjects are a little bit dark. If it's too far, you're out of luck. But if it's pretty close... overexpose the sky a little bit, underexpose your subject a little bit. This you can rescue later. If you expose your subject right on and really blow the sky out far, you probably won't be able to bring it all back.
Right.
And the same is true the other way. If you expose the sky nice and dark how you want it, your subjects are probably going to be completely gone. And even when you bring them up, forget it. You're going to be out of luck. So what you want to do is go right in the middle. Don't worry about getting zero of the exposure right, a little bit under, a little bit over. You can bring that back if you shoot raw. So five.
I think that's a good tip, though, because I do this all the time.
Same.
And I'm amazed at how much you can fix it in post to get what you want.
You really can. Like we both use Lightroom now, as the bulk of, I guess, most of our listeners probably do. So in five, in post-processing, here's where we really make this sing, where we get the skies to come back. First things first, I bring down the highlights. That's like my first move.
Yeah.
Crank those right down. They're probably not going to affect your subject very much because you've underexposed. It's probably going to bring your sky right back into range. Adjust the contrast a little bit to see, you know, flavor to taste, I guess. Use one of Adam's new flavorizers.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also, as soon as the highlights go down, I bring the shadows right up. Now you'll find that on your subject, they become, you can see them now, and their exposure is bang on while the sky is pretty much unaffected. And this is how we even that out.
Right.
From there, if you really want to bring the skies down some more, let's say you have a lot of blue sky, you go into the saturation and lightness of the colors, I forget what the slider's called. Click on the selector tool on saturation and go click on the sky and drag the saturation up a little bit. That'll make the blues a little bit bluer. And then click on the lightness tab and click on that same area and drag it down. Drag down the, it's not called lightness. Was it called lightness?
Or brightness, I think. Each individual color channel, what he's referring to, has sort of two selections. And one is the saturation of that color, and one is how bright it appears. And I think there's a hue one as well that you can tinker with.
Right.
There's three sliders for each color channel. And just basically tinker around until you get it where you like the color of it.
So I take the blues and drag the saturation up and the lightness or brightness down.
Yeah.
And then you get that more dramatic sky. And generally, depending on what your subjects are wearing, it'll leave your subjects untouched. And so now you have that. And the last little move is I use the clarity slider just with a little bit, just to kind of get it where I want it. Now, oftentimes, that's enough. In the case of my kid's photo, that was enough. That's where I wanted it. But in Lightroom, you can bring in a digital graduated filter that you didn't want to use on the camera.
Okay.
So you can go ahead and drag that down just over the sky. It'll feather it in, leave it off your subjects, and now you can control the exposure and the contrast and all of that clarity on the top half of the image, and it gradually fades out, hence the name graduated.
Right.
Now, this one is awesome as well, and I didn't need to use it in this. I tried it just for fun, and it looked terrible. It was just overdone, didn't need it, but in general, it's really handy to have because you can dial everything in later to how you like it. You can change the angle. You don't have to have it straight up and down. My only suggestion with this, if you're going to use the graduated filter in Lightroom, is use it responsibly. If you overdo it, we're going to know.
Okay. I have one more little tip about this kind of image and the slider you could play with.
Go.
Depending on the camera you're using, I find with the 5D Classic, if I do this and I shoot in the middle and the faces are just, you know, a little underexposed, depending on the ISO I'm shooting at, when you bring up the shadows, oftentimes like you get a lot of noise, so you, mm-hmm. or even just a moderate amount of noise that sometimes I'm okay with, sometimes I find it distracting, in which case Lightroom does an exceptionally good job in the noise cancellation sliders, and I mm-hmm. often will just bring that up just a little bit. I still want to see a bit of the noise, but I just don't want it to be distracting, and it is unbelievable how good that slider works, and you would never ever know that I used it, unless, like, of course, like you talk about, you overuse it, you crank it, then you'll start to see what it does. But just with a little bump on the noise canceling slider, I don't know if that slider exists in every piece of software, but they've figured it out. Like, it's phenomenal.
I think both of us used to use Aperture, and there was some sort of a noise reduction in there that should have been called waste of time.
Exactly.
This one is amazing. I mean, and I use it very, very rarely. I try very hard to expose properly and not need it, but every once in a while I do. I've never gone, I think it's in a, is it percentage wise? It does.
I don't know if it's percentage. It's just like it's numerical. Yeah. Something like that.
Point being, I think it goes 0 to 100. I've never gone above 25 ever.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Usually when I do use it, I use it right around 20.
Yeah.
And it is phenomenal what it does. So just keep that in mind. Or there might be some, if you're new to Lightroom, and there might be some photos that you've kept that you thought, oh, I love this photo, but it's got a lot of noise, and you might take that photo and just try bumping a little bit of the noise cancellation, especially if you've shot it in RAW. But super
the move
handy.
There is go to 100%, like zoom into the face at 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not too far. Like, don't go to 200%. Don't go to 50%. Go right to exactly 100% and then add the noise reduction and you'll see the full effect.
Exactly. That's exactly what I do. I like to zoom to the face mm-hmm. and then tinker with it there. Yeah.
And then you click it and there's kind of a delay while it adds it and you're like, oh yeah, that looks awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do it.
Worth the purchase of Lightroom alone. I guarantee, you know, if you are, you know, at the stage that I was when I got Lightroom about, I don't know, a year ago, whenever I got it, year and a half, got it, I don't remember. That alone was worth the move to Lightroom.
Concur 100%. Challenge for next week, Adam. Let's do window light.
Okay.
Since we've already both shot them and I'm looking at your picture now.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, we're recording a bunch in a row here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Window light's already in the can. Where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca, and if you're lucky, maybe someday on Facebook, Two Hosers Facebook site.
We're on the edge of our seats, man.
Yeah.
You can find my stuff at alnetridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the pictures, links, popcorn maybe, I don't know. Everything we just talked about. Until next week, Adam.
Yeah.
Everybody else, get out there and make better photos.